Okay, not a problem. Well, I'm going to give some of you guys, well, I'm going to give everybody some lifesavers here, because what I'm about to share with you guys, for many of you, will truly be a lifesaver. Maybe not now, but maybe 4 or 5 years down the road. And for the rest of you who are just like, oh my gosh, it's too early to be here, and no, I'm not a morning person, thank you. It's going to be a piece of candy for you to chew on while I talk to you a little bit about budgeting and finance. I hope I got a flavor everybody likes. There you go. You're welcome. There you go. If anybody else comes in, give them a couple lifesavers. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about myself right now. At this particular point in my life, I teach learning different children. We actually relocated our family to Dallas about 4 years ago because we have a son who is diagnosed with moderate to severe dyslexia, and the state that we lived in at that time does not diagnose dyslexia, because if they diagnose it, well, then of course they would have to serve it. And so I had a very bright child who was not receiving the education he needed. So our family decided to move to the lovely city of Dallas. And I am actually teaching third graders at Shelton School and Evaluation Center in Dallas. Now, what's kind of funny is my third graders do this same budget in a modified form. So we'll get there. So if you think it's all complicated and stuff, don't worry. My third graders do it. We start them at the beginning of the year, and by the end of the year, my third graders are actually on a budget. Wait, third graders are doing it, I promise you. It's real easy. When we were, before we left our home state of Mississippi, I worked in outside sales by degree. My degree is speech pathology and audiology. My husband works in the oil industry and had built a beautiful dream home, doing lots of fun things, taking lots of fun vacations, but we just never seemed to have any extra money. I mean, we made real good money, but we were like, well, where's it all going? Woke up one morning and realized we were $250,000 in debt. And you think, well, gosh, how in the world can that happen? I'm 35 years old, we have 3 children, and I'm $250,000 in debt. What's called credit cards, school loans, vacations, houses, brand new cars. You don't think about it until one morning you wake up and you're going, why aren't the lights on here? There's something wrong with this picture. And it's a really scary wake-up call. And at that point, even though we were Christians, we had never really been taught about money and about what God says about money. Yeah, we knew there's a gazillion scriptures in the Bible that said, oh, yeah, you need to manage your money, you need to do this. But what we didn't realize was that it truly affects every single part, every aspect of our life. And of course, at that point, we felt like we were treading water and we had on weights. And so we were just barely keeping our head above water. We went through several different programs trying to find the right program. And, you know, a lot of it, they'd throw a little bit of scripture in it here, and then they'd throw a little bit of scripture here. But there was never really a definite, workable plan. I listened and went through Crown Ministries with Larry Burkett. Absolutely wonderful information through there. But still, just the plan was a little bit more detailed, and it was very difficult to follow. And then just through a fluke, was flipping through talk radio one day and ran across a guy on the radio by the name of Dave Ramsey and Financial Peace. And I'm at that point in outside sales, so I have a territory. I do about 200 miles a day, so I'm able to listen to him for about 2 hours a day going, man, this guy makes sense. This guy makes sense. And so when he said he was coming to our state, very much against my husband's will, kicking and screaming when we got there. I said, we're going to this financial seminar. And he's like, no, not going there again. Been there, done that, doesn't work. So finally get him to go. And of course, he and the other 5,000 other men that didn't want to be there, there were skid marks from where we kind of drug them in the parking lot. And, you know, then it just all kind of made sense. Because personal finance is not about book smarts. It's about 10, 15% book smart, and the rest of it boils down to self-control. And it's also, in a lot of ways, a spiritual battle. We get marketed debt every single day. How many of you guys have ever been to college or been out anywhere other than here to go to school? How many of you, when you went to those colleges or those schools or visited other campuses, and when you go for a registration or for rush week, and you see Citibank or all the different American Express, all the different credit card companies having their booths set up, and you can get this credit card with their logo, that school logo on it. Have you guys ever seen that at any of the other colleges? That's big, big money. They often will pay the colleges $50,000 to $100,000 to be able to set up and use that, because they know that you guys in college want a lifestyle that you see your parents living now. And they can offer you that through these low monthly payments. And so debt is marketed to us. It's marketed to our children. It's marketed to 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds. And you don't realize it until all of a sudden you graduate from college, student loans start coming in. You have that car payment that you just, you know, kind of deferred payments on. They'll let you do that too. That's not a real smart thing either. Let you defer car payments while you're in college. And then you get out and you have this $40,000 a year job, and you realize you're $80,000 in debt between credit cards, vehicles, rent-to-own furniture. Have you guys seen those commercials? Get your furniture now. Don't pay anything for 90 days. Don't pay anything for a year. What they don't tell you is, if you don't pay now, on the day that it's due, if you don't pay it all in full, you then start making payments. But on the 2 years that you weren't paying on it, you're going to pay interest on all of that, plus a daily accrued interest. So that furniture that was no interest has now cost you about 4 times the interest on that. And that's how they get you guys, because you have no credit, hopefully, at this point. And they'll get you and say, you don't have to have credit. This is real easy. So what my family and I did, we made all those mistakes. We bought things on credit. We had the little credit card debts. Anything that you could imagine, we had it. Had great vacations. I think we're still paying for a few of them. It took us about 10 years, 10 or 11 years, to create this massive amount of debt that my family had created. And it's taken us about 7 years to get it down to a point that is just not absolutely frightening. And along the way, some of the things that we found out is that men and women think differently about money. We react differently about it. And we spend it differently. For women, when we go out shopping, part of it is we'll go out and we'll hunt for all the bargains. And we can actually, believe it or not, go shopping and go through all of the stores and hunt all day long and actually not purchase anything that day, because Nordstrom's may have something that we like over here, but if we can get it over here a little bit cheaper, then we're going to go over here and get it. You guys, it is like you are zoned. I know what I want. I'm going to get it. Just don't make me stay in this mall. I don't care if it's $50 more. Give it to me, and I'm out of here. Okay, it's kind of like just, you've been there, haven't you? You don't like the mall, do you? No, didn't think so. I bet you don't like Walmart either. That's kind of like a form of torture. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we think differently about it. For you guys, if you don't have enough money for something, oh, yeah, well, whatever. We'll get it next month. We'll get it next month. The females, okay, rent's late. Can't pay the bills. That bridge under 75, I'm not wanting to live there. Okay, we tend to be worriers. That's what we go to thinking about. You guys, you know, that's down the road. That's down the road. Because you guys don't worry because, you know, the girlfriends or the girls or whatever, they're going to do all the worrying for you. Okay, but worry is a big part of it. The marriage is... in America tend to break up more from financial stress. That is the biggest factor in the marriage breakups. And if you start your marriage out or your relationship out with something in common with money, then you've set a whole new relationship. As Christians, we're already a little bit different from most people, because as a Christian, we don't really walk in the world the same way other people do. So when it comes to money, I'm a real weirdo. I've got to be a real weirdo. And you know what? That's an okay thing, because there's so many scriptures in the Bible that tells me that I need to be accountable and that I need to teach my children about it. When we started to move out here and realized that we were $250,000 in debt, I learned what bondage is. Any of you guys know what bondage is? Does anybody have a clue what bondage is? Is there anything in your life right now that you feel like is holding you down or has you in bondage? You don't have to answer, but you guys know what I'm talking about. Okay? I was making great money in this job. Absolutely hated it. The company that I was working for were doing some things, and I just felt like that they were doing some things that just weren't right. But guess what? I was in bondage to that employer because they could pay me enough money that I could meet my debts. So I was in bondage to my debt. Okay, I was in bondage twice. I was in bondage to debt, and the Bible tells us to owe no man. And I was also in bondage to a job that I couldn't walk away from because I was already in bondage to debt. And if you're in a position that you can't walk away from, if they start doing something unethical because you're wondering, well, if I walk away, can we make the mortgage? Can we put food on the table? Can my kids have shoes? That's a really scary place to be. That's a really big wake-up call. So we started finding a way to dig out. And there were seven little bitty things that we found out about, and we call them kind of the baby steps. And the first thing is to create an emergency fund. This is really big. Write this in red. Put a star around it. If you don't get anything else out of this, understand that you need to have an emergency fund. Because if you don't have an emergency fund and you do have a credit card, Visa is going to very willingly catch the slack. But if you have an emergency fund, then you're prepared. And what we tell people, put $1,000 in there. Make that your priority. I don't care what else you do, get $1,000 minimum in that savings account. Even if you only can put $4, $5 a month, whatever, get that savings account to $1,000. Leave it alone. Don't touch it. And then sit down and write out what defines an emergency. What is an emergency? For me, right now, an emergency is not the fact that I have a flat tire and a dent in the door because my daughter drove my car. Okay? That's an inconvenience. I can go spend $50 and get another tire. Now, if my transmission falls out on the way back to McKinney, that could be an emergency. That's where I would go to my emergency fund. But if you don't define what an emergency fund is, and you know you have this $1,000 over here in the bank, then you're going to say, ooh, well, I got this money over here. And you start picking at it. And then when emergency comes around, well, you've kind of pulled the money out of here that's dry. So you need to have an emergency fund, and you need to define what in your life constitutes an emergency. Because your emergency may not be the same as mine. My emergency right now would be a medical expense for my children, because it's the first of the year. We have deductibles to meet, and you have to pay that money right when you go in. So define what an emergency is to you. And also define the difference between a want and a need. Because there are things that I would really like to have. I would love to have a new car. My car's got 173,000 miles on it. Dadgum thing doesn't burn oil, gets 34 miles to the gallon, and just won't die. So I can, and it's paid for. And so, dadgummit, I just cannot go and take the money that I've been saving for that car and go get another one, because this one isn't dead yet. It's not the prettiest thing in the world, but it's really reliable. So, you know, I really want a car, but I don't have a need for a new car. And it really doesn't bother me if you guys look at me kind of funny and say, she's driving that old car out there, you know. Because my son tells me all the time, Mom, you need to take that alumni sticker off. The car's a little old. It's getting a little beat up. When you get a BMW, you can put that alumni sticker from your local college back on there. But for now, you look really dumb having an alumni sticker driving this old clunker around. Doesn't bother me. I don't care what he thinks. The other thing that we learned really easy is that and quickly is that all gifts come from God. And that he is the person that we have to pay first. He's not a waiter that I tip after I've paid everybody else. He gets the first fruits. And if you look up the word tithe, it actually means tenth. If you're in debt, you can't always give a tenth. But what you do is you have a plan. And what I teach you guys to do is to spend all of your money on paper before you actually go out and spend it. Write down everything that you're going to spend for the month on paper. And then you have a plan for your money. And then at the end of the month, you can say, well, I know I spent this for this and this for this. Instead of saying, where did my money go this month? Where did my money go? So if you look at the monthly cash flow plan that I gave you, which is really your budget, the very, very, very first thing that I have up there is your charitable gifts. In that, you want to eventually get that to a minimum of 10 to 15%. That's your percentage. These are important. Jot those down beside it. 10 to 15%. I just stuck them up here on my paper so you'd kind of know. If you put them there, you can see it. It's just charitable gifts, 10 to 15%. That's different from your savings. Your savings is going to be your emergency fund and then later things that you want. Things that you want. 5 to 10% of what you bring home, you need to put in savings. So that when life happens, Visa doesn't have to catch the slack. MasterCard doesn't have to catch the slack. And eventually, you'll get to the point where you can pay into your retirement fund and eventually a college fund. Right now, some of you may be looking at grad school. We told our kids, and we have three, two in college and one at school for learning differences, we'll pay for your first degree, your master's, your doctorate, your own. I have a 23-year-old daughter that is diligently right now trying to save because she wants to get a master's degree. Actually, she wants to get a nurse practitioner. Her bachelor's is on us. That's it. Your housing. When you guys start paying an apartment, start paying rent. No more than 25 to 35% of what you bring home should go to that mortgage. About a quarter of your paycheck should be what you spend on your mortgage. It's under your housing. A lot of people have things, these really bad things called second mortgages. We're not going to really get into that yet. In your house, in your first mortgage, you'll have things like your real estate taxes. I just put a lot of things. We have a lot of things that fall under housing. When you pay your house note, you pay things like property taxes and escrow and insurance and lots of things like that. Typically, they're rolled into your house notes, so that just goes into your housing. But all of that combined doesn't need to be more than 25 to 35% of your bring home. Not your gross, your bring home. Your utilities, gas, water, phone, trash, cable. And if you've got more than one phone, cell phone, home phone, that's still phone, okay? Your total utilities, you don't want to spend more than 5 to 10% of that same chunk of money that you bring home. So if you're only bringing home $400 right now and you got this wonderful cell phone plan that allows you to talk all you want, but you're paying $150 a month for it, you got to need to relook at that plan. You're spending too much money on your cell phone. Food and groceries, 5 to 15%. Okay, that includes going out to eat, guys. That's food. McDonald's, all that fun stuff, that's food. That goes in that 5 to 15%. That's the one I struggle with. I have an hour and 15-minute commute every morning. I have an hour and 15-minute commute every evening. I leave my house at 6:45 every morning. On Tuesday nights, after she leaves, I'm still at my school for another 2.5-3 hours. Sometimes it is not very happy for me to have to go home if we have to cook. Staying within that is hard. Transportation. car payment, 10 to 15%. But I'm going to tell you how to not have a car payment. You're not going to have a car payment. Those are bad things. Okay? I'm just throwing the percentages out so you'll have them for when you do your project, because I normally don't do this, but I knew you had a project coming up. Go to the next page, page 61. On it, clothing, you actually do have to budget for clothing. Clothes do wear out. 2 to 7% is what you're going to put back each paycheck. Medical and health. For a lot of you guys, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't even have to worry about this. I'm still on mom and dad's insurance. Well, guess what? If you decide to quit school tomorrow and you're over 18 years old and you're not a full-time student, you got about 3 months and your health insurance gets dropped. One trip to the emergency room can set you back about 10 grand and you're liable. So if you're thinking you want to quit school and get off mom and dad's health plan because school or whatever, you better be putting some money back for an insurance premium. It's a must. And then, of course, we get down to all this personal stuff like life insurance, child care, and you're going, okay, don't need any of that. But you do get a haircut. You do, most of the girls wear makeup. You guys, I'm seeing gel and some hair in here, you know, when you don't have the ball caps on. Those things cost money. You budget for them. Magazines, newspapers. And then for you guys down at the very bottom, your blow money. You got to have it. It's the amount that you give yourself each month. I have blow money. My husband has blow money. He cannot ask me what I spent my blow money on. If I want to go spend my blow money, $45, and go get a pedicure, he cannot say a word about it. If he wants to go blow his, chasing this stupid little white ball around this green thing for 4 or 5 hours, that's his problem. I can't say anything about it, but that's his blow money. And you got to have it, okay, because you need a release. On the next page, you got recreation. That's the fun stuff. Entertainment. Those are those movies that you go to, Blockbuster, anything that you consider entertainment. Okay, you might consider chasing that little ball entertainment. That may be something you budget for. Entertainment for my family is going to the movie, or we actually like to go shooting, to the shooting range. So that's something that as a family that we do. And we budget for a vacation because we work really hard and we need a release. So we budget in our family for vacation, and that doesn't always mean an elaborate trip. It may just mean we need 4 days away. As a matter of fact, just so I could come talk to you guys, and I need some feedback on how I'm doing here in a little bit, I postponed a vacation. My family left on Saturday, going on vacation. I'm flying out to meet them today because I feel so strongly about what I can share with you guys. I'm actually flying out to meet the rest of my family today, because Dina and I had talked about when would be a good time to come and talk to you guys. Debts. Hopefully, you guys have zero in that column. If you do create debt, and that's all of those what we call consumer debts, your MasterCard, your Visa, department stores, those finance companies, you know, those check cashing companies that suck you in, student loans, all that junk, you want to keep your debt between 5 and 10%. Of your income. And I'm throwing percentages out at you so that when you actually put down your expenses on these next couple of pages, you can see where you're out of line in your spending. Okay? When you actually start doing a budget, when you do your budget project, find an accountability partner. When you set your budget up, find an accountability partner. Somebody you can say, okay, I've got $20 to spend for entertainment this 2 weeks. This is all I'm going to spend. And if you get to the point you say, well, but I can take some money out of this other envelope, your accountability partner, somebody that's close enough to you and friends enough to you and said, no, you can't. Because what you're going to do is you're going to write down everything you make, everything you spend, and you're going to spend it before you actually put it in your bank, and you're going to have zeros at the bottom of the page so that you know where all of your money's going to. Okay? Does anybody in here actually have debt right now? Other than me? Okay. Yeah, All right, well, let me show you a little trick. Most counselors look at debt a little bit differently, and I've looked at it from all different ways. Debt is very emotional, and it goes back to that bondage thing that we were talking about. And if you have debt, what I want you to do is make yourself a list of every single person you owe. We call this a debt snowball, okay? You make a list of every person you owe. I don't care if you owe your roommate down the hall 50 cents for a Coke last week that you got out of the machine. You write it down. You write down the total amount that you owe that person, or if it's a credit card or a loan or whatever, and then you write down your monthly payment. When you do your budget and you figure out what you've got coming in and what you're going to spend, you're going to pay the minimum payment on everything until you get that emergency fund up to $1,000. That emergency fund is critical, okay? Once you get that emergency fund up to $1,000, then you're going to kind of go into caveman mode. You're going to start knocking this debt out. And the money that you've been putting on that emergency fund, you're going to go from the smallest debt to the largest debt, okay? And you're going to have that piece of paper, and you're going to kind of keep it handy where you can look at it every day. Ooh, I've got five extra dollars. I owe Sally down the hall $5. Here you go. And you mark it off. You highlight that off. You've killed it. You're not going to recreate it again. It is dead. You have knocked that thing out, okay? Well, next month, you earn that $5 again, and that was your payment. That was your $5. So you're going to take that $5 plus the minimum payment of what you've been paying on the second debt, and now instead of paying them $10, you're going to pay them $15, okay? You don't prioritize them in order of percentage rates. Most people will tell you pay your highest percentage rate off first, or that typically is your largest debt. That's going to be like your credit card that you've gotten behind on, so they've jacked the rate up on you, okay? Start with the lowest because you get an emotional release. And when you are deeply in debt, emotions become a big part of it, and you have to feel like you're making accomplishments. If you start with your biggest debt and start trying to pay that huge, big debt off first, you're never going to get any emotional relief, and you're going to stay tensed and stressed, and it's like it's not going to feel like it's moving anywhere. So it's kind of like eating an elephant one bite at a time, and that's pretty much what you do with debt. You knock it out one debt at a time. It's not always easy. It's slow, and sometimes it's painful. But in the end, it's so much better. You can give, and you can do, and you can help others, and it can become a ministry for you in so many ways. Take your lowest debt, lowest amount you owe, kill it. Roll it over to the next month, to the next month, to the next month, okay? Eventually, by the time you get to your car, you know, maybe your car payment's $300 a month, and you've been paying $200 or $300 a month on all this other stuff, guess what? Now you're paying $600 a month on your car. Okay? It really adds up. But the biggest thing is you get to kill it, and you get that emotional release of, I'm actually accomplishing something. Where if you start from the biggest debt, you don't ever get that emotional release. And 90% of the people who start at the top with the biggest debt never become debt-free because they never get the emotional release of, I can do this. And I realize that looking at it from that perspective is very different than what a lot of the top financial people out there will tell you to do. But we're to be stewards over everything that we have, and that includes our time, our money, our talents, and our efforts. And we're not supposed to worry about things. But when you're worried about, can you keep the electricity on? Can you make rent money this month? Can I buy my books that I'm going to need for the next semester? Do I have the money to put together this project that I'm going to need for next Thursday? I don't want you guys to be in debt. I want you guys to be millionaires. I want you guys to retire on the latte plan. How many of you guys in here like Starbucks other than me? Does anybody in here like Starbucks? Okay, who's the Coca-holic in here? one or two Cokes a day.
He's gone, but like a 2 liter a day.
Yeah, exactly, okay? If you're spending, and I averaged it out, I went by, and I have to be real careful because I really like white chocolate mochas. I mean, they are like, yeah, they're like addictive, aren't they? Okay. I only get the small one because I'm ADD enough as it is, and if I drink one in the morning, you add caffeine, sugar, and all that, I am bouncing off the walls. But the small one runs me about $3.82 for a small cup of coffee. Okay. A bunch of people do that every single morning. Add it up. If you do that every single morning, or even 5 mornings out of the week, okay, you're spending about $100 a month on coffee. Because sometimes you'll say, oh man, I need that double shot. Well, add another $2 because it's about $1 a shot. If you take that same $100 and invest it over time, same $100, not asking you to give them up, just don't drink one every day. And put that money back and stick it in a mutual fund. You don't ever do anything else. You'll retire with about $1.1 million at age 65. That's the difference between retiring and eating Alpo and retiring and eating prime rib. And you guys are looking at me like, eating Alpo? There are a lot of your elderly people who eat Alpo because it is cheaper than hamburger meat. And I'm not kidding. And it's because no one taught them to plan. My parents had money. They were wealthy in their own right. And they just thought that by living in the same household that we would kind of absorb it. But personal finance needs to be directly taught, and it needs to start at an early age. I'm going to tell you guys that I teach this to my third graders. I do. We have 3 envelopes. I give them 3 plain Jane mailing envelopes. On one of it, they write savings. And then they can decorate it however they want to decorate it. I would suggest you do the same. On the second envelope, we get to write charitable gifts because I teach, even though it's in a private school, I have to take scripture out of it, okay? So I can't say tithing. So we put charitable gifts in that second envelope, and they get to decorate it however they want to. That third envelope, spending. Decorate it however you want to, okay? For my third graders, this becomes a lesson in self-control and division and money management. I go out and buy all these cute little pencils and things that they want, and we talk about an emergency. What is an emergency? And they have to define. You should hear some of the things that third graders come up with, and it's frightening what I hear because it's a reflection of what's going on in their families. I've had third graders tell me an emergency is not having money to buy groceries with. I teach at a school that the tuition is $17,000 a year, okay? These kids shouldn't be worrying about that, but it's that whole trickle-down effect. Then you have the others that say, I don't have a clue what an emergency is, okay? So we talk about that. It's been very sad for the past 2 years because we've had some huge tragedies, okay? The first one was the tsunami. This past year it's been Katrina, which is very close to my heart, and I'll tell you that in a minute. But it was a big eye-opener, and I was able to share Christ with third graders who don't know Christ. We looked at the tsunami, and we looked at everything that these people had and what they lost, okay? And how we, a bunch of third graders, could give back. And so what we did was we had a bake sale, and we started collecting this money that we were going to give to a charity that could best disperse the money, okay? These are third graders. And then I said, well, you know, if you're going to give your money away to an organization you really, really, really need to know how that money is going to be used. And so we talked about administration. And I related it to, we have Dr. Pickering, who's the big head of our school. We have Miss Samuelson, who's your principal. And then you have Miss Stafford, who's the queen of the classroom. Okay? That's what they call me, the queen. And we talked about, you know, if I get in trouble, who fusses at me? Well, that would be Miss Samuelson. Well, if I'm in really big trouble, then who do I go see? Well, that would be Dr. Pickering. Okay? Well, who do you think's going to make more money? Oh, well, they got it. Okay? Same chain of command with them. If they're in trouble, they come to me. Then they go to Mrs. Samuelson. So we started looking at the different charitable contributions, and we actually build a city called Boxville with my third graders because people don't have a concept of what charitable giving is. And being able to give back to your community doesn't always have to be with money. So we give back with our time and with our efforts and with lots of other things. So for my students, we actually build a city, and I believe you've seen it 2 years in a row now. I think you've seen my Boxville. They build a city hall. We build roads. We talk about how the roads are paid for. We build a park, and we talk about, you know, the taxes that we pay, that they pay for our police and all the different things that third graders don't think about. And then we think about, well, how do these police officers get paid? Well, they get paid for with taxes. Well, how does this park bench get paid for? The taxes again. But then we talk about community service and things like Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, which a lot of them are involved in. And then they start getting really interested. And so for homework, I'll say, go find a charity. Come back and tell me one charity. And then we Google search it. And we look how much money, if you give, say, the Red Cross, how much of it actually makes it to the victims who need it, and how much of it pays salaries for the people who work there. And I was amazed at some of the things that my third graders brought in. Through their research, they brought in things like, several of them brought in the Jewish relief organizations. Several of them thought of Red Cross. A couple of children brought in Catholic Relief Services. One of them actually brought in the Veterans of Foreign Wars, which does a lot of charitable work. You guys don't hear about it as much. Very big when I was a kid. But we researched it, and of the ones that my students brought in, we learned that the Catholic Charities gave the most back to the victims, and that they also could account for the most of what they did. So my students chose a charitable giving because I couldn't say you need to tithe, okay? I have to take God out of it, unfortunately, in that situation. But you and I both know that all good things, everything good comes from God. Everything, okay? Now, how many of you have ever had your backside swiped with a wooden spoon? Mm-hmm. Guess what? God hands out discipline too. And when he prunes you, it is not pretty, okay? The Prayer of Jabez, any of you guys ever read that book? A grapevine, when God prunes it back, when the vineyard keeper prunes it back, that beautiful grapevine, it is not pretty at all. It's a stump, okay? When God prunes us, it hurts, and it's a stump, and I don't want to see him prune you in regard to your finances. So give back to God. Give back in your time. Give back in your talents. Give back in any ability that you have. Find a little kid. Share with them, okay? What my kids did was, they had to put back in their charity envelope, they had to put back 10%. 1/10. And if you look at 1/10, it's actually a fraction. 1 of 10 equal parts. And you guys are going, okay, third grade math. They're just learning to divide. I give these kids 10 little, I call them Skittles, but think about the sorry game pieces, you know, that are blue, red, you know, your little man that you move around. Okay, we call them Skittles. You've seen my Skittles. I give them 10 green Skittles, okay? And I'm just going to I am not an artist. You may feel free to laugh because my students tell me I can kill a stick man every day. One, two, three. Have I got 10 up there yet, guys? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay. The first thing, because they earn a commission in my classroom. They are responsible. I have the coolest classroom. You'll have to ask her. I have the coolest classroom. But we don't let the janitors come in and the custodians really come in and clean our classroom because my students are responsible. That is their little miniature environment. We have plants. We have animals. They dust it. They clean it. They organize the works on the shelf. They clean the whiteboards. We have a super sweeper. They clean it. The room, they have ownership of that room because they have some responsibility for it. Okay? That all comes back in to being responsible and having some self-control. They make a huge mess. They clean it up. Okay? So when they earn an allowance at home, they get to earn an allowance, and many of them will tell me, you have an allowance. And I said, well, you know what? That's nice, because when I start paying them, I say, I don't give you an allowance. I'm going to pay you a commission, because that's what happens in the real world. You get a commission. And they look at me kind of funny, and I said, well, you know, when you get an allowance, if you do something bad, does your mom and dad still sometimes give you an allowance? Have you guys ever gotten an allowance? Some of you may even be on an allowance now in college, okay? Your parents make allowances for you. They might threaten you. Okay, if you fail that class, I am cutting you off. Any of you guys ever heard that? Okay. But because they love you, they will make an allowance. And they're going to bend over backwards to help you become successful. In the real world, you earn a commission, whether it's in the form of a paycheck or whatever. So I pay my kids a commission. They have a jobs list every week that they're responsible for. And if it's not checked off and signed by the Queen or Mrs. McMillan, they don't earn the money for that week, okay? And we have a ceiling of what they can earn, and we use actual play money. And they actually are paid in money. It's a commission. You don't do it, you don't get paid for it. Third grade, they understand this concept really, really quickly, okay? But once they do get their paycheck on Friday, and we pay them on Friday for what they have earned, and if there was a job like feeding the dog or feeding the fish, if you don't feed Mr. Blue, he didn't eat that day. Not only do you not get your commission, but you have to pay the person that did feed Mr. Blue. Okay? There's consequences. When they get their money, we divide it out. We put these 10 little people out, and they have to divide their money into 10 equal piles, which also means that they're going to have to make change, okay? They take, say I've given them $10, okay, just to make it easy. They have $10. They take one of 10 equal parts, because they have their 10 men and each person has the same amount, and they take this one guy that's got the $1 and they put him in their charitable givings envelope. They can never touch that money. It's a gift. You give a gift away, you don't call it back. It's a gift. Okay? Don't look for something in return. You give it, and give it with your heart. Okay? The very next thing that they have to do is they have to take another 1/10 of that money. And they have to put it in savings, in their envelope that says savings. They cannot touch that money. It is their emergency fund. In their envelope, they've written down what constitutes an emergency in the classroom. Okay? Then they have 8/10 left that they can put in their spending envelope, that they can do whatever they want to do with it. And I have some cool items that I put in my closet, and we open the store up. And it's amazing to watch because you got this 80% left. And for the students, this is really basic. For you guys, out of this 80%, well, then you're going to have to take part of it and pay your, the next thing would be your housing. You know, you're going to want to pay the essentials, your housing, your food, and your utilities, and then you're going to get to Visa and MasterCard. If you're paying Visa and MasterCard first and you're wondering, how am I going to make rent this month? Flip that around. You got to have a place to live. You got to be able to eat so you can go out and kill something the next day, debt-wise. You got to have a place to eat. You got to have a place to sleep. You got to have clothes on your back. Then you deal with Visa, MasterCard, and student loans, okay? My little kiddos here, I've got cool pencils, all kinds of junk. Passes to go see a movie with Mrs. Stafford. Some of them, like you guys, you get paid the next day, you are broke. You guys ever done that? Get paid the next day, man, what happened? I look nice, got a new outfit, got my new Sam Moon purse yesterday, tutored an extra hour to go get that, okay? But you're broke, and you don't have a clue where it went. That's what they do, third graders. And then they come up to me, because when we start the budget, I take all the pencils in the classroom, and I put them up. I don't give them a pencil anymore. You want a pencil? You got to buy it. I have these cool mechanical pencils. They range from 25 cents up to a dollar. I got these little plain Jane wooden pencils that are yellow and not cool at all. They're a nickel. Well, they've spent all their money. Miss Stafford took up all the pencils. Well, now, in their spending envelope, they got 10 cents left. It's Monday morning. They spent all their money on Friday. They don't have a pencil. Miss Stafford, I need to buy a pencil. Okay. I want this mechanical pencil. Well, okay, that's 75 cents. Well, I got 10 cents, but I got money in savings. What's an emergency? Well, I need a pencil. You're right, you do need a pencil. But you want this mechanical pencil. What you need is a pencil. You can afford this plain Jane wooden pencil. And when you defined your emergency, you said you wouldn't pull it out except for these things. You can buy a wooden pencil. Does that make sense to you guys? You ever caught yourself doing that? You want, you need? Okay? I want a BMW 325i real bad. But I don't need a BMW 325i. Okay? How many of you guys in here are making a car payment? Anybody in here have a car payment? You guys are way ahead of the game. If you start making yourself a car payment now, even if you don't have a car payment, put it into your savings account. This is what we have our daughters do. They don't, either one of them, have a car payment. We bought them $1,500 junkers when they were young because they're going to wreck it. Had that last wreck Friday night. Thank you. But it's paid cash for, okay? When you guys think you're big enough and old enough and want to start buying a car, pay yourself a car note. Think about if you're going to go out and buy a Toyota Camry, which you can get one of those now for about $18,000. They'll let you finance the thing up to 6 years now. Makes your payment real low, okay? So you start paying yourself $200 a month, $250 a month, whatever that car payment's going to be, and you start putting it in there, and then you start budgeting for that car payment, okay? When it comes time to purchase your car, I'm paying myself a car payment right now, okay? I'm hoping my car will get 250,000 miles out of it. It's a Toyota, it should. Whatever's in my bank account at that time is what I will buy for a car. If there's $10,000 in it, then that's what I'll pay. Okay, my daughter, her car got totaled, not her fault. She had $1,200 in her account. Okay, we already bought her that $1,500 car. Now she had to start paying into her account. Her car got totaled. Guess what? She's got $1,200 to go out and find another car. because we won't co-sign on a loan. The Bible tells us not to co-sign with anybody. Why would you put your name on someone else's debt? Okay? Lots of these companies will loan you money for a car because they can come get it. But you can own your own car. And once you have that, even if you end up with a $1,200 car like my daughter, she's still paying herself a car note. In a year or 6 months, she can sell that, take what she's got, trade up, okay? Does that make sense at all to you guys? I know it's early. You guys have any questions? Because I feel like I'm kind of rambling. I'm losing you guys. You're falling asleep on me. Anybody have any questions? Anything you want to ask about? I promise I won't beat you with a wet noodle. And it's a safe place to ask it. How many of you, anybody in here got kids? Anybody in here got kids? It's tough, isn't it? It's tough. You have to think about things you don't normally think about, like diapers and unexpected doctor bills and lots of things. Yes?
I have a question.
Sure.
So, if we were to take our budget for when we're getting married, and mm-hmm. we were to pack up how much the apartment that we found that we really like is, then, and I know it's on a mortgage or whatever, but
right.
it ends up being a little bit more than that percentage. If we're kind of homebodies and we'll be newlyweds, do you think that that could factor in, since we'd be spending a lot of time at the house anyway, instead of like factor a little bit out of the entertainment and recreation? Or do you think that that's setting up for failure?
I wouldn't. Well, two schools of thought on that. One, if you're both in agreement on it and you can back one another and boost one another and support one another, when that apartment gets really tiny and you have to say, I really need to go to the movie, but we sacrifice the movie money for our apartment, okay? Because you need to think about it. It's going to be a place that you spend a lot of time, okay? We have a small house. We downsized. When we moved to Texas, we had to do a lot of the same things that you were doing. We had a very large home in Mississippi. When we moved out here, my kids have dubbed our house the Cracker Box, okay, because we're paying $17,000 in tuition. The house gets real small, and sometimes you need to get out. So if you guys are in agreement with it, there are a lot of things that you can go out and you can do that are free. I wouldn't go much over that 35%, okay? I don't know what you guys are looking at. And I would make sure that...
37.
And I'd make sure you had really no other debt going into that. I mean, if that means that you guys have debt now and you have to work really hard now, get a second job before you guys get married, knock that stuff off. But I'd have an emergency fund in place before I said I do. Make that, go through some counseling and... Have that done. Make sure you've got that emergency fund in place. But yeah,
okay, cool.
As long as you guys can talk about it, because what happens a lot of times when you get in a relationship is that you don't talk about it because you really don't want the other person to know what's going on. And if you can ever, guys that are dating, once you really think that you're serious about this person, learn to talk about the money now. Get the big things out of the way before you say, I do. All of the important issues like how we're going to spend our money, how we are going to serve our God, how we're going to raise our children. Make the big decisions before you get married, because you're not going to change them once you say, I do. Once you say, I do, you've got what you had all along, but the opportunity to change them and to make changes in yourself needs to come before. Anybody else have any questions? How many of you want to do mission work? How many of you have been on a mission trip? How many of you had to raise money to go on that mission trip? Okay. How many of you are looking at long-term service in the mission field? Boy, you got a mission here in the United States. Okay. When you start wanting to go on missions and you start having to solicit funds, and I'm there. My son, who is, will turn 15 this summer in Africa with his uncle. His uncle is a long-term missionary in the country of Tanzania, East Africa. Part of what we're having him do is put together a budget of how the money that comes in will be spent. He needs to hold himself accountable to those people who are trusting him. Because If he's going over there to set an example for others, I certainly don't want him going over there with debt. Okay, if you're thinking about mission work, even for a couple of months, make a budget for it. What do you need to do before you go? Because you're going to be going to church leaders and elders and even kids that are going to be looking up to you. And you want to be able to stand upright with them. Anybody else have any questions? Mom, you got any comments you want to throw in? Okay. Anything? Okay. Let me give you the baby steps. I didn't really cover those.
Okay, you did. Okay.
I didn't. I kind of. And then you know, there's 7 baby steps. Your first one is to get that $1,000 in the bank. For me, that is when we moved out to Texas. My husband works in the oil industry, so he was gone a bit, and it took everything we moved. We actually had to, as a family, decide we took the equity for our home to educate our child. Okay. That was a tough decision for our family. So we had to start back over and rebuild that emergency fund. So I find myself a college graduate with 2 degrees, 3 children, waiting tables at Olive Garden in McKinney to get this emergency fund back in place. That's how important it was. We didn't want to be in a position where we had to rely on Visa. Get that $1,000 there, guys. Set a goal. Figure out what it's going to take. Okay? You guys can even scale it down to 500 if you're students and you're still drawing, getting money from mom and dad. But ideally, you want to get that up to $1,000 as quickly as possible. You want to continue to add to it. I don't care if you're adding $4 a month. Okay? Savings is something that you have to do. It's a discipline. And you have to teach people to do it because we don't do it automatically. We're not savers by nature. The Americans are the biggest spenders and the least savers. Okay, the second step is to do your debt snowball. Make that list. Smallest debt to largest debt. That's number 2. And remember, once you kill a debt, don't go revive it again, you know? Don't go heal it. Don't go revive it. Kill it. Not just for 3 days in a tomb. We want it there forever, okay? Kill it. Your third step, once you've killed the debts and your debt snowball and you're basically down to your mortgage and your utilities, possibly a car note, but I hope not. Then you're going to beef up your emergency fund, okay? You're going to start putting money back into that emergency fund, and you're going to have 3 to 6 months worth of your bills in that fund, okay? So that if you actually are in a situation like I found myself in, and your boss is doing some things that you're thinking as a Christian, ooh, I don't want to be a part of this. Well, guess what? You can walk away and you can say, I don't have to be a part of this. I've got an emergency fund. I've got 3 to 6 months to go out and find something else. Now, in the meantime, am I going to sit on my backside? No. I may be flipping burgers at McDonald's, okay? But I can walk away and I don't have to be in bondage to a bad situation. The fourth thing that you're going to do is save a little bit more. You're going to go back and you're going to look at your savings plan and you're going to invest in possibly a Roth IRA. You're going to put about 15% in that. And it's going to be part of your budget forever and ever, amen. You're going to continue to save. Okay? You don't have kids yet. You may not be married. You may be married. You start paying for your retirement then. The next step, start saving for a college fund. May not be a college fund. You may never have children. Put it in there anyway. Create a foundation. Give back. Somebody along the way gave to you. There are a lot of kids out there that would love to go to college, but they can't. Teach them what you know. Give back. Do a college fund. The sixth step, you have no debt now. You've done your debt snowballer. You have very little debt, okay? So all that money that you rolled over, you remember as you were going down that hill on that snowball and that money kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger? Start chunking it on the principal of your mortgage, okay? Because until you have the paperwork for your house, your trailer, your apartment, or whatever in your hand that says you own it, you're just paying rent. You don't own it. You miss a house payment, you miss an apartment lease note, you miss a trailer payment, you see who owns that piece of property, because it ain't you. Not until that final payment is made. Then when it's made, walk outside, take your shoes off, and feel how much better the grass feels under your feet, because you do own it then. And the last step is to continue to build wealth through wise investments. Mutual funds, real estate. When you guys look at a mutual fund, there's tons of them out there. You're in an economics class, you're fixing to be doing a project. When you start looking at the mutual funds that you want to invest in, make sure that the mutual fund has been around for about 15 to 20 years. You want to make sure that the average investment or the average yield is between 12 and 18%. There are lots of those out there, okay? And make sure it's real well diversified. I know mutual funds is something you guys don't want to hear about, but down the road, they're really important, okay? Anybody else have any questions? Do you have any?
Let's see. I'm missing a couple percentages in my sheet.
Okay. Does that make y'all feel good?
I made it to page 61.
Okay, on 61 on the clothing, about 2 to 7%.
Okay.
Oh, and guys, don't buy anything if it's not on sale. That's insane. Use coupons. Mail in those rebates that it takes 5 minutes to fill out. You save lots of money doing that. And you know what? Lots of wealthy people give lots of nice stuff to thrift shops that still have tags on them. Salvation Army bought my son a tux, $20, couldn't rent him one for less than 90. I got an eighth grader that owns a tux because it was cheaper to go to Salvation Army and buy him one. You know, medical and health, 5 to 10%. Mm-hmm. And on the medical and health, a lot of times the 5 to 10 is going to be like you're out of pocket. Okay, let me give you a little addendum on that. On your medical and health, it's like you're out of pocket, your deductibles, you go to the doctor, you got to pay the $25, okay? The rest of it's going to go on insurance. A lot of times companies will pay for the insurance. If you have to pay a premium, you know, then that goes back into a definite necessary thing. Personal, I had 5 to 10%. Recreation, 5 to 10%. And your debts, 5 to 10%. Now, what happens on this fund, on this sheet, these three sheets that I gave you? Copy it. It is reproducible. Hang on to it. Write down, like, the things that you know, your rent, your mortgage, what your utilities, what you got a ballpark figure if you're out paying it, okay? Then when the bills come in and you actually have to write out those checks, over here there's a column that says actually spent. Then write what you really and truly actually spent, okay? Take a little notepad with you and write down everything you spent, or get an envelope. If you've got your fun money in there, put cash in your fun money envelope. When the fun money envelope's empty, you cannot rob Peter to pay Paul. Have your accountability partner slap your hand and say no. You also can't borrow from your accountability partner. Okay, it's borrowing. You're not going to borrow. You're going to suck it up and say, well, need to rethink that one. Okay? What you're looking for is a zero-based budget. At the end of the month, you don't want any money left over because you've told your money where to go. It didn't tell you where to go. Okay? If you don't have a plan, at the end of the month, you're going to say, I got all this stuff I got to pay, and I had all this money, where'd it go? If you spend it here first, you'll have it, and you'll know where it went. The other thing on this paper, you'll see a lot of things with asterisks by them. Those are the things that, in addition to your emergency fund, that you might want to create a separate account for. They're bills that don't necessarily come up every month. Car insurance. Some people like to pay it quarterly. Break it down. Figure out, if you get paid once a month, how much money a month do you need to be putting aside so that when it comes up, you don't have to say, oh, that bill's due in 2 weeks. It's $300. What am I going to do? Well, you've budgeted for it, okay? Break it down. If you've got, you're not spending that 2 to 7% on clothes this month, stick it in this account. When the tennis shoes wear out, transfer it over. That's where it comes from, but it's there. There will be months that you won't spend money on any of the things that you're putting back in that second account for. But then there's months that you're going to spend that and maybe a little bit more. But you've got it. You've budgeted for it and you've saved for it. Repairs and tires. Guys, your cars wear out. Tires wear out, girls. Set of tires on my car is about $200. I break that down into 12 months. Okay? And put just a little bit back each month so that when you do have a repair, I'm driving a car with 173,000 miles on it. I put about $35 every 2 weeks back for repairs. Okay? Haven't had to use any. We put the same amount back for my daughter's car. Well, we bought a timing belt, a water pump, and a serpentine belt last week. It was $163. Didn't have to worry about it because we've been putting it back for a while because she's driving an older car, okay? Figure out an amount that you can live with, that percentage-wise, put it back after you get your $1,000 in the bank. Ladies, you have to budget for dry cleaning. We have to budget for it. You don't think about it, guys. You don't want to do your laundry, go drop it off. In my family, because I work a lot, I'm not ironing my husband's shirts every day. I'm not home all the time. So we budget $20 a week, $80 a month. It's at a place where we can do that now. Couldn't always do it when I had small kids. As a matter of fact, I made a ton of money off of guys like you. When I went to school, I went back to school. My 35th birthday present was to go back and get my college degree. I was 35 years old before I did that. I had small children at home. Lived in a college town. Went to the frat houses. Hey, any of you guys need your laundry done? Made a fortune. Take it home. My 3, 5, and 9-year-old, they could fold towels really well. And I ironed. I picked it up. I delivered it. You guys didn't have to worry about it. Had a nice home-based business. My children earned a commission. It starts young, guys. Some of you ladies, you can make a fortune. You also learn a whole lot about the guys that you're thinking about maybe possibly one day marrying. Okay? Big business in it, though. Good way for a stay-at-home mom to stay home. Cosmetics. They cost money. You have to budget for them. Tube of Estee Lauder face cream, $50. Okay? Takes you about 6 months to go through it. That's $10 a month. Put it back. Cosmetics are expensive. It's a billion-dollar industry. Health and wellness is a billion-dollar industry. It's our next billion-dollar industry. I'm seeing some pretty highlights and some nice haircuts. Highlights, $70. They last about, what, a month and a half, 2 months? Budget for it. How much does it cost you a week to keep those highlights in there? Okay? So then you don't have to have 2 months of roots going, oh my gosh, I really need hair color. It's not in the budget. I got to wait another 2 weeks till I can save for it. Put the $5 to $7 back if you're going to do the highlights and the cuts or the manicures, pedicures, whatever your thing is. And don't forget to allow yourself some fun money. There's lots of free fun stuff out there. Anybody have any questions on this? This is really a key to your project. If you guys want to learn more about what I did, I gave you a really fast crash course. www.daveramsey.com. I crammed a lot of information in with you, and I'm put you to sleep. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm sorry. Go listen to his website. Some really good practical information out there. You'll find some things that'll help you, and you'll find some things you really don't want to do. For you guys that are thinking about getting married, he offers a 13-week program that you can go through so you guys will be right on track. What you guys got was a very short version of something that families in crisis go through over a 13-week period. But if you can ever come to financial peace within your family, you will have a unity in your marriage or a unity and a peace with your God that you will never have any other way. I hope that for some of you it truly was a lifesaver and that it did make some sense and I didn't bore you to tears. Anything else? Do you need me to talk?
I think that's good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.